The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Sandy Martmoney, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm Andy Cleff, and my co-host is Paul Alia. We are so pleased to be joined today by our guest, Sandy Martmoney. Good evening to you.
Good morning to you in the US. Hello.
Oh, that's right. 14 hours time shift? Did we make you get up really early for this, Sandy?
No, I've managed to be at the gym and everything. It's 11 o'clock. I just live in the future.
You're one of New Zealand's leading Agile coaches. I understand you're a former Olympic athlete. We all know you're an accomplished presenter. And for our listening audiences, you soon hear Sandy's a force of really positive energy, no nonsense, and steeped in Agile. Along with her buddy David Moll, she's a co-author of Creating Great Teams, How Self-Selection Lets People Excel. And that topic, self-selection, will be our focus on this podcast. So, Sandy, a few years ago, I read it was about 2013, you started an experiment with New Zealand's largest e-commerce provider. You wanted to explore how to design teams with that special combination of skills, personalities, and you had this radical Kiwi idea. Trust people to know best and let them decide which team they should work on. Let them self-select. What on earth were you thinking?
We were asking ourselves the exact same question many, many times. I am still not sure, but we came up with something that I think is turned out really, really well. And what happened to us was we basically had 150 to 200 people, and we needed to get them into teams. And what happened around that time was that we were in the middle of an agile adoption where the values were, hey, let's trust people, let's treat them like adults who can actually take care of themselves, who can make rational and good decisions. And we thought, well, why are we then going back and making decisions for them? Why can't we just let them decide what they want to work on and who they want to work with?
Wait, you had 150 people. So the thought that comes to mind, why not just put all their talents and skills and, you know, qualities into a database, press a button and optimize things, and then let the managers take credit. What did the managers do? How did they react?
Have you ever tried the skills database? Because I have.
Yeah, I hate them.
Yeah, me too. It's treating people like machines, and if we're all the same, if teams were made up just of a collection of skills, that'd be fine. But I found the great team I've seen and I've always been on, those are the teams that gel because they have a history, they have a shared purpose, because the relationships, like all the stuff between the people and the skills, is what's important. And I don't think you can get that into a skills database. And what the manager said, they needed some convincing in the beginning, but ultimately it was really great for them too. Have you ever tried being on the management side of those kind of things?
Oh, yeah. We filled out spreadsheets and stack ranked people, and it was miserable. I asked the question about database in jest, but it's a common practice, I think. So you came up with this process of self-selection, and I understand you've repeated it many times, multiple occasions. Before we get too deeply into the hows and the whys, and to avoid confusion, can you help us tease apart two concepts that are related, self-organizing versus self-selecting?
Yes, the close relation and also the words that are very similar make it very often confusing. And self-organization is something that happens within a team, where a team decides how they work together to achieve a goal. Self-selection is in a higher level of abstraction, where you take an entire organization or a department and you deal with the problem, how do you get into teams in the first place? And that's when people decide themselves or self-select is a self-selecting team. You can also call it a self-designed team.
What were some of the problems that you were trying to solve for your business by engaging in these practices?
At that time, with our first self-selection, we were growing a lot because it was a really successful company. We were hiring people, and we figured out that just adding more people didn't actually increase productivity that much. We were starting to tread over each other's toes. We had the normal run a project approach and then disband the team. And we were releasing twice a day, but we weren't really good at the big stuff and decided, well, what would work is relatively stable teams, teams that stay together for a while and they achieve a shared purpose. And we then had two options. Should we decide who goes on which team, or should people on the teams, should people who do the work decide which teams they should be in?
So you mentioned times of growth and scaling. What are some other things that you've noticed in your travels since 2013 that lend themselves to try out self-selection?
I think apart from growth, which was just our initial prompt, I have done self-selections and seen self-selections in other countries where people just wanted to have a check-in. Are we actually in the right teams? Where people are in teams already because and sometimes stable teams can go a bit stale and figure out what's the best mix of people for our organization. And sometimes I've also seen people who started a new department who did an innovation department, and they needed to get 60 people, and then within that organize themselves. So basically, either a new start or something that we have, and we want to see are we actually organized in the best possible way.
Nice. You mentioned stagnation. We had a talk a couple of episodes back. Paul, you and I talked with Heidi Helfand about dynamic reteaming and her concept of extending the Tuckman model from, norming, forming, performing, stagnating. So that idea of reteaming with self-selection really intrigues me.
At Agile 2016, I saw the two of you together. Actually, Heidi, you and David split an otherwise hour and a half session, 45 minutes each.
It was really enjoyable for us too, and I really love the work Heidi is doing. And my very first reaction was, whoa, what are you talking about? Not stable teams. And my assumption was that she was talking about getting people together for a project and then completely disbanding it. But what I've learned since is that what she's talking about is actually, there's a huge overlap with the things that David and I value, which is a team that is mostly stable. And for and stable does not mean like until the end of time, but until it either doesn't work anymore or when teams need new impulses. And there's research in sports that says that if you're together for more than 18 months, 2 years, then you start to stagnate. And getting and having new impulses by swapping out team members, for example, works really well. And what I think is really important, and I understand Heidi does is somewhere in the same area, is the main thing is that people should be in control of how those teams are being changed.
And I like the time frame element too, because oftentimes the project could be 6 or 12 weeks, and so saying, 18 to 24 months is a more realistic cadence. Not absolutely tied to that, but a place to begin to look for stagnation. Yeah, wonderful. So your book, I've just started to dive into it, and it's a wonderful read. We'll have links to it in our show notes. I'd like to spend a little time to dive into details on how you've organized events. What are some guidelines, some constraints you put in place? Tell us more about that, Sandy.
So on a very tactical level, it is, first of all, as simple as getting all the people who need to get into Teams into one big room and have themselves select. But before that, there's actually a lot of preparation. And whenever I've seen a self-selection be in trouble, very often it has been related to not enough preparation. And preparation starts with making sure people want to do this, both people who are affected and management, that everyone wants, or most people want to do this, and take away the fear. And once you're in a place to do that, we worked always with having a blueprint of what teams do we actually need, which is one of the hardest things to decide upon upfront. Something we do before the self-selection event and as part of the preparation. So which teams do we need? And then come up with our expectations for those teams. And from what we know from research is it shouldn't be more than 7 people. And if it's fewer than 3, it's not a team. We want them to be capable of delivering to the purpose for us that was end-to-end. And it was, has always been really important to then get this event, which is relatively short and sharp. It's half a day where people choose which team they want to be in. They either get it right the first time, actually almost never happens, or they run rounds of iterations of how to get the teams in a way so they fulfill the constraints.
So half a day, how many people?
150, 200.
Wow. So in half a day. So this is hey, Giff, this is a shout out to you. Dunbar's number. A tribe of 150 where you can know everybody. And in half a day, you'll form teams of 5 plus or minus 2. So I can't do the math that quickly in my head, but 25 teams? Is that about right?
Yeah.
What if, have you ever run into a situation? So the first thing you said when you were preparing is make sure everybody wants to do this. Have you ever been in a hybrid situation where there are some that don't want to self-select and some that do?
I think that's always happening. I don't think you ever get 100%, but if you get most people wanting to do this, then I think you are good. And one thing where I've tried to figure out, are they actually ready, is to have a shepherd day. If people can figure out 24 hours signing up for some kind of project or an idea and finding people to do this with, if that works well on a company level, then usually they're ready for a self-selection.
So do a ship it day to warm up on this concept of self-selection. But those teams that were the ship it teams aren't necessarily the teams that are going to persist for the next 12 months, but it's a dry run, if you will, or,
yes.
I love it.
It's a dry run that I have tried and works really well. And I also know that Dana from HSBC Digital is working on a preparation game. I haven't seen it, but I think she has introduced it at a conference, and I'd love to see how that works.
Have you ever mixed in the exercise of marketplace of skills with this self-selection? Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I have, and it's great. I think it's great for small self-selections. It's and most self-selections are actually smaller than 150 people. If you've got 20 people, 15, 20, 25 people, then I find it works really well. And because often you've got people who don't know each other well, and especially if you have a company that's growing, you've got lots of new people. So what I've seen is marketplace of skills, and if you want to scale it, I know M. Campbell Pretty in Australia has invented something a bit like speed dating before a self-selection, where people talk to each other for 3 minutes and get to know each other.
Tell us a little more about how you define the team missions, what the vision, the purpose of a particular team is that someone's going to self-select to be part of.
That is actually, I find, the hardest part, way harder than self-selection, because it is a way in which you structure an entire organization if those teams are there to persist. And in terms of mission, I find that motivation or purpose in Daniel Pink's sense comes from having an external focus. So most of the teams that I help creating missions, they have an external customer focus, like support the sellers or supports people who support the legal team, support the customer relations team. And can't always be done, but in general, I try to have as many customer-focused teams as possible with a few internal consultancy teams, such as sometimes platforms and operations.
So when you're defining these teams, so I'm thinking 150 people, 20, 25 teams. Teams are all capable of delivering. Are you using any of the scaling models? I don't want to mention any brand names because, oh God, the flames we'll get for that. But one comes to mind that's the Spotify model, right? Where you have teams or squads, and then the next element of that fractal is the tribe, which shares some overlap of mission. Does that enter into the self-selection process on this half day?
For me, and the way I have done it, absolutely yes. And that is the tribes with a Dunbar number. And even though Spotify vehemently deny that this is a model, I don't actually think they get to decide anymore. We all use it, or many of us use it as a model. So yes, and it fits in really, really well. I've also, and dare I say this, I have seen people, or I know that people in Australia have come up with combining self-selection with then running safe, where they have the very first day in creating a release train, and they let people self-select into teams. So don't think that it's tied into any particular model, even though I personally really like Spotify.
Yeah, I tried the self-selection in that four-letter word of a scaling framework as well. And it's tough. It's tough for an organization that comes from it. I mean, I don't know if it's purely American, but the traditional American culture definitely is command and control. It's more industrial. And, you know, we're learning. And I think folks like the three of us are out, regardless of what country we're out, trying to transform the world of work, and we're making a dent here and there, but it's a real shock for a culture that's command and control to have that much empowerment given out. And you know, what are some of the objections when you try to share these ideas, and somebody encounters these ideas for the very first time? What are the immediate objections that they start spewing?
It depends on who you're talking to. Like, one part is management, where people go, "Whoa, this will never work," and why it is so far from people's thought process that it doesn't even enter the realm of possibility. And I've had many conversations to talk to managers like, "Hey, if you do this, you're going to get it wrong. If people do this, they're going to get it wrong too. It's never going to be perfect. It doesn't need to be perfect." But what happens is, why do you think as a manager you know more and can do this better than people? And once you then have something that works but is not perfect, one of the big differences is that what happens afterwards. If you choose as a manager, people are going to come up to you and whinge and complain about why they have to do with that person or why they're on that team and so on. I've been on the receiving end of that. If you let people choose themselves, then first of all, they will try to make it work. And secondly, they will complain less because they have either put themselves in that position or they are there and they know exactly why and what trade-offs they have made.
Yeah, that's the selling point right there, because I've been in middle management and senior management on and off for a good part of my career now. And it's tough. Now, let me ask you about when you are missing a skill that the team might need to be cross-functional and really self-sufficient. You gave a suggestion for this in your talk, and I would like to ask you about like the empty slots and how you go about bringing that wholeness to the team later.
If you are coming from a growth perspective and are lucky because you're hiring people, it will show you where the gaps are and what type of people you need to hire. So what we had was we invented imaginary friends, where people had index cards where they could invent a friend and say, this is what we need, and then they could go out and hire for that. And they had a huge say in who the people were that were hired into those empty slots.
I just love the imaginary friends, the imagery that brings.
You've set us up, so you've checked that the organization is ready before diving into it, right? The people are open to trying it. The time is right. You're confident it can work. You've got management, I don't want to say buy-in, but permission, also a bad word, but you're upfront about it. You're not going to ask for forgiveness later. You've gone through, you've done the event. People have self-selected into teams. Talk us through some things that you do immediately afterwards, that you do for check-ins, that you do to make sure that the event is smooth, the teams are forming. Basically, post-selection event follow-up. What does that look like?
Can I just for a moment go back to before it all happens? Because when you mentioned that by now we have management buy-in and they have said, okay, what has happened the last 2 years to me is actually very often it comes the other way around. It is management. It is managers approaching me asking to help with the self-selection. So it's not always managers who need convincing and people on the teams who really want this. Sometimes everyone wants it, or sometimes it can be the other way around. So this is not a management versus working people problem. I find, and I don't know if you've observed the same, but a lot for me has changed in the last 2 years with lots, or mainly management asking if we could come and help them with a self-selection.
Yeah, I think in my travels, it's sometimes I get to be that middle manager or senior manager that is the agilist in the bunch. And when you've got teams that are agilists, full of agilists too, it's an awesome jam. It can be the other way around, where the managers, middle managers that I'm working with are the agilist and the teams haven't experienced it yet. So right. It's just who has, I don't know if I want to say drunk the Kool-Aid, but who has seen these other ways that we're out sharing work, and it doesn't need convincing, doesn't have this block, and it's just ready to go.
Interesting. Okay. So before we get to post-selection event, I want to think one more thing. So during the event, so Paul, you raised some question, what if there's a gap? What are some other things that pop up that you've seen as common questions or issues in the process itself during the self-selection event? Do people get into fights over teams? Am I going to be in the corner by myself because nobody wants me? What happens? Have you seen just beautiful things or a mix?
I have seen a mix. There's all the obvious what if questions, like what if people fight, what if someone's in the corner, no one picks them. That doesn't happen. People are reasonable adults, and if we treat them like that, they actually behave like adults. There is no people who don't be picked, like the poor person who is really bad at sports and nobody picks them at school. It doesn't happen because you put yourself into a team. And there's also prices for if you really don't know what to do because you're totally new and you don't know anyone, there's an area you can put your photo in and say, hey, I'm looking for a team. Can you please come and approach me? And those things actually don't happen. Where I've seen problems is that sometimes I've gone into self-selection and we weren't entirely clear around some of the expectations. For example, we had one team where we said we don't want to have more than we had a budget limitation, and that would have taken us to three people max. But we just had general constraints, and we hadn't told anyone actually we don't want to spend more than three full-time employees on this particular team. We could have just have added it as a constraint, but we weren't really clear around that ourselves. So I think being clear around our expectations is really important. And also resisting the urge to try to control as from a management side. People usually want to add more constraints. Shouldn't we have a mix of domain knowledge, a mix of juniors and seniors? Shouldn't we tell people we need that many developers and this many BAs and that many testers? To resist all of that, because that just introduces complexity, and again, it introduces an element of management selection. And three developers or three senior developers, a senior developer doesn't equal another senior developer. And that goes for any group. It's again a skills database.
So with 150, 200 people in this half-day event, how many facilitators do you have? How much prep time is involved? Order of magnitude?
That scale of things, I have two facilitators and maybe two to three secondary facilitators, people who just help, who just keep an ear on the ground, who inform us from what's going on, because you can't keep an eye on the vibe in the entire room with all that many people. Preparation is, if it's the first time on that scale of things, like a couple of months.
Now, yeah, what do you mean by a couple of months if that's the first time? What are some of the things? You mean that's the lead time into the event, but not, I'm imagining, not 2 months of working every day. Tell us what kind of stuff you're doing to prepare for the event, please.
So if that's a group of people who've never done self-selection before, there's a lot of this convincing work of just airing the idea and talking to people around it, give them the chance to talk about it, talk about their feelings, and maybe try out small exercises such as a Shepherd Day to give people the confidence they can actually do this. Talking about what is going to happen, why it is going to happen, why this is a good idea, and listen to people's worries and fears, and then take them up, have one-on-one conversations, have conversations with the entire company, have conversations in different group sizes. And then going through the fact, so what teams do we actually need that will persist for more than one project? All of those things.
I just recently messed up on that. And it's trying to introduce what is probably an advanced idea in Agile, I think. And when it's not an advanced idea anymore, I can't wait for the next thing. But to give this much empowerment to teams is a lot of power to give. And what you're saying is you're socializing this idea and giving individuals and groups of people time to take this in and give some feedback and try it on before the event.
So Paul, I'm not going to let you off the hook there. You said you messed up, and as you know, we have our FailCon coming up in 2018. So what's the title of your FailCon presentation?
So I tried to throw a group of system engineers who were above and beyond the software development practices of the organization. They had somehow slipped through the cracks, and because they were writing infrastructure as code and stuff like that, nobody knew to, I want to say the word, police them the same way. The governance. Governance is really the healthy word. And so they were doing their own thing. But not as cross-functional as I thought they could be. And I really wanted to do the marketplace of skills and competency matrix and just throw them into the idea. And I kind of surprised them. And It shouldn't have been a surprise to me that they were like, what the heck are you talking about? And even trying to recover from that in the weeks to follow, it didn't happen. Teams wanted to stay organized the way they were organized. The thought of moving from one team to another, and I'm not sure if there were individuals that were like, damn, that would be cool. I'd really like to do that. And the middle managers just were not going for it. I don't know exactly what happened. I do know that it was a failure. So there's my FailCon. I'll come up with the title later.
Yeah, no slide decks. All right, so circle back. So we've had a successful self-selection event. Sandy, how do you keep that success flowing? What are keys for post-event follow-up?
I think it's the going back to kind of the usual, how do you kick off a team? Like, you've got a group of people and they are on day one of a new team. And so first of all is immediately talk to them, talk to the new teams and make sure that everyone understands this is, you have made a choice. We're going to respect this choice. And even though you might not start on your new team tomorrow because you have a higher card in your team or something needs to be finished, this is going to happen and we're going to respect your choice. And keep talking to those team, even though they sometimes haven't started working together just yet, but start organizing the marketplace of skills events, the lean coffees, and put them in charge of when should they start, how should they start, what kind of kickoff would they like. So I work a lot with having teams decide what kickoff they want. And I basically throw them little cards to, with where they can choose activities such as journey lines, marketplace of skills, and all the other usual ones. And that's something that is very much in the spirit of they are in control how they want to start and how this should work. And we agree that they need some kind of kickoff. And we also make sure that they get to choose how they want to work together. We facilitate sessions around, so which of the Agile ingredients would you like to use? And do you want something more Scrum, more Kanban, your own magic creation? How's that going to look? And how do you want to start off? Which experiments do you want to start off with?
So it's interesting to me, and it didn't occur to me before you just said it, that the teams may not get to work right after this event. There may be some lag time before they fully form and become fully dedicated to whatever that new team mission is. Interesting. How much time are we talking? A couple of days, a week, or longer?
Totally depends. The when we had my first self-selection, my and David's first self-selection was going from no teams into teams, and then they were self-selected. So that took 3 to 4 weeks. A bit more actually, including a Christmas break. Because some people weren't free, some stuff needed to be finished. And but we made a very clear commitment, this is going to happen right now. And what has happened since then is once people were in teams and it worked well, they now do a self-selection every 6 months. And that takes a lot less preparation. It's almost just walking in and doing it. And those teams, when there are changes, that takes, actually, that's the day after.
So I actually had a handwritten note in my notes from when I saw you at Agile 2016, and you just answered the question in the previous segment of what I was going to ask you, what might I have meant? Don't bait and switch teams. Teams will resent it. And I think you just answered the question. So does that note bring anything else to mind for you?
Don't bait and switch teams. I'm not really sure what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I was saying to myself, is I'm not 100% sure what I mean, but I think you just said that, like, once you make the choice, or once the teams make the choice of who they want to work with in the next segment of work, that you don't change. And I think that was my way of, I wrote down, don't bait and switch teams and missions, they will regret it. Or they will resent it, rather, is what I said.
I think I'm totally interpreting what might have been gone on in your head, but what it could be is I was talking about if you do it self-selection and then there is you still have this thing that's actually quite fragile because it's photos on pieces of paper. Nothing has happened the day you walk out. And then there's a danger that the next thing that could happen is management going, whoa, this team is never going to work. That's never going to work. Why don't we just put Peter over there and James over there? And when that happens or management just interferes afterwards, that's a huge problem because that basically destroys all trust in the entire self-selection.
Right. I think you just nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the end. You would never have another event where people took it seriously.
And in that case, don't do it. Then just have an honest management selection.
What are you finding are the long-term effects of going with this system of empowerment?
Overall, there is a... People seem to be happier. We do surveys. We ask them how they feel. They seem to be happier. They are also by their own... But by their own accordance, they are more productive. We do measure throughputs, but productivity in software development is really hard to measure. But they seem to be more productive. They seem to be happier. And it has become, in many organizations, part of the culture where people can't even think of any other way how they would get into teams. And they see it as a basic fundamental right almost to decide who they want to work with.
What effects have you seen on the next layer, the managers and the senior leadership teams?
Relief. Someone has told me it feels lighter. Yes. I don't have to deal with this anymore. I don't have to spend hours. Well, first of all, I don't have a resourcing sheet. Secondly, I don't have to deal with that person not wanting to be on that other team. And it's actually not really value-adding work for a manager.
No, it's not. I mean, I love it.
What do you love about it?
I love because, so I'm listening to The Goal on audiobook now, and it's wonderful because it's being done as if it's a play. Everybody has a different voice. And I know these lessons from reading the book ages ago and just working with them, but to hear it done again is bringing things back to life for me on, you know, the old project management of utilization, like making sure that people are working constantly without any slack time and all the bad things that happen from that mistaken view of optimization. And so by not filling out these resource sheets and proving that you're going to have people utilized up to 98% or 80% or whatever, right? Instead, you're just finding the right mix of talent and you're observing what happens and you're really being agile. You're not paying lip service to the word agile, right? You're not doing some cargo cult agile or zombie scrum or something like that. And you're just not paying attention to that utilization. It's pretty freeing. But instead, you're paying attention to the things that matter. Like, are you making money? Are you satisfying customers?
Are your people happy?
Absolutely. I mean, taking care of your employees and your customers and making a profit, right? Those are the kind of things that I want to measure, not utilization of resources. God, we shouldn't call them resources, right? They're people.
This has been a really wonderful, enjoyable conversation, and we're coming up on the end of our time box here. Sandy, I want to give you a chance to share some upcoming events, some shout outs. What do you got cooking?
At the moment, I'm looking forward to presenting in Australia at Agile and Core on the 12th and 14th of November. I'm also going to be at YAL at the beginning of December in Australia, and then at ROP in Munich in February. And apart from that, I don't want to have a big sales pitch, but I do think that we have put a lot of work into writing our book, which is basically a how-to. And it's a book that's not very theoretical, but it's something that's meant to be taken as a, hey, we think self-selection is a great idea. It could work for us too. And I wanted to have something, David and I wanted to have something we could just give to people and say, hey, try it out. It's safe. We have done all the mistakes for you. what could possibly go wrong.
We'll include a link to that. And so if people come up with their own mistakes and they want to share them with you, what's the best way they're going to get in touch with you, Sandy?
That would be email, which is sandy@nomad8.com, or I'm at smamol on Twitter. And the funny thing is many people actually do. I have a collection of self-selections from all over the world by now, and it's really interesting stuff people are telling me.
Fantastic. Paul, what do you got cooking? What's coming up for you?
I'm going to attend conferences in November. I'm going to DevOps Enterprise Summit and AWS reInvent in November. The first one in San Francisco, second one in Vegas. Other than that, I'm hanging out at the Coalition, coalition.agileuprising.com. Twitter is Paul_V_Elia. And then I have the domain name paulelia.net. I cannot wrestle paulelia.com from this Brit. I've been fighting him for that domain for 15 years, and he's never going to give it up.
You are a stubborn man. Thanks again to our guests. It's been a wonderful conversation, Sammy Mamoli. And to you, our listening audience, if you enjoyed this episode, please give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcasting platform. Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.